भगवते वासुदेवाय सञ्जातकोपास्फुरितारुणाधरम् सन्दास्य दद्भिर्दरिमन्थभाजनम् भित्त्वा मृषार्षो दृशरस्मनारहो जघासहायङ्गवम् अन्तरं गता. Being very angry and biting his reddish lips with his teeth, Krishna, with false tears in his eyes, broke the container of yogurt with a piece of stone. Then he entered a room and began to eat the freshly churned butter in a solitary place. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. It is natural that when a child becomes angry, he can begin crying with false tears in his eyes. So Krishna did this, and biting his reddish lips with his teeth, he broke the pot with a stone, entered a room, and began to eat the freshly churned butter. Reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 9, entitled Mother Yashoda Binds Lord Krishna. Text 6. This is the section of the Bhagavatam and the particular verse that is for the ongoing classes every day. Some exceptional verses from another part of Bhagavatam were selected the last few days. We're reading about the Damodar Leela, wherein the Absolute Truth, Parabrahman, in the form of a very small baby child, Krishna, is it performing pastimes in Gokul in such a way to conquer the hearts of the devotees and ultimately give every living being the opportunity to be attracted to the infinite sweetness of Krishna. In conventional religion or spirituality, God reveals himself as an all-powerful creator, maintainer, and destroyer of all that exists. Pronounces laws, absolute laws that are meant for everyone to follow,
and gives heavenly rewards or hellish punishments to those according to how they respond to those laws. And that absolute truth or God manifests incredible, inconceivable power, strength, magnificence. And people obey initially out of fear of what will happen if they do not obey. And gradually, by obeying out of fear, after some time, we become purified and love awakens from within us. Of course, sometimes human beings, they attach their own false egos, ahankars, upon their particular conceptions of God. And if God is an all-powerful destroyer, then on behalf of God, we can be all-powerful destroyers. If God conquers everything, we should conquer everyone according to our conceptions. But actually, the power of God is not supposed to boost our ego. The power of God is meant, by understanding it, to humble us. Here we find the absolute truth, the cause of all causes, the supreme source of everything that exists, as a very innocent, beautiful little baby who's just learned how to walk. And although, as the Almighty God tells people to be obedient, here he's acting very disobedient. Why? Some people, they don't understand who Krishna is. They say, how does God expect us to obey him if he doesn't obey? How does he expect us to follow rules if he doesn't follow rules? Krishna, his power, he has a Sudarshan chakra. When he was only 1 or 2 days old, he showed us what he could do to Putana. In the same little size he has, he delivered this incredible demon. There is no possible person who could be as demoniac as Putana in today's world. Yes, we have some cruel people. We have some terrorists, but can you imagine if Putana was here today? She was very evil. She was killing babies by the thousands. And she can manifest manifest a form 12 miles in size. Do you know anyone who could do that? She was extremely powerful. What to speak of Agasura, Pralambasura, Keshi, Aristasura. But Krishna, in his very childlike way, he would deliver all of them. He would not only stop all their atrocities, but he would give them liberation. What government, administrative, Supreme Court justice can give a person liberation? What to speak of elevation to Vaikuntha? Can you show me any policeman or judicial body that can give the worst criminal the position of Krishna's mother in the spiritual world? But Krishna is a little baby, could do all these things. So when he's acting in this way, when he's performing these pastimes, it's simply to give pleasure to his devotees and to attract the hearts of all the world. And we all have our free will, whether we're willing to open our minds to be attracted by Krishna's beautiful pastimes. The ultimate power of God is God's beauty, God's love, God's sweetness. It is infinitely greater than even his powers. It is his greatest power. Because he is Rasa Bihari. Rasa Bihari means in the spiritual world, and when he comes to this world, His only real purpose, ultimately, is to enjoy loving relationships. We are conquered by the love of Krishna, and Krishna willingly is conquered by the love of his devotee. In this beautiful story, a revelation of the spiritual world, Yashoda Maya is churning yogurt into butter. And as she's doing it, she's singing wonderful songs about Krishna. It's very early in the morning. And as she's singing about Krishna, thinking about Krishna, her motherly love intensifies and takes the form of milk that starts flowing from her breast. This is an expression of her love. So Krishna, who's in bed, he wakes up and becomes hungry to drink that milk. In other words, Krishna is hungry to taste the sweetness of his devotee's love. So little Gopal runs to his mother, and with one hand he holds the churning rod and stops her from churning, and basically tells her, "Now it's time to feed me. No more churning." And then he climbs on her lap, and she begins to feed him her milk. As he's enjoying, and she's enjoying, looking at his beautiful, beautiful face, the ecstasy of her heart is increasing at every moment. And as the ecstasy increases, the milk gets sweeter, because the milk is her ecstatic love. So her milk is ever increasingly getting sweeter as Krishna is drinking it, as her love is increasing, looking at the beauty of Krishna's face. And Krishna, yegatamam prapadyante tams tataiva bhajamyaham. Krishna reciprocates according to how a devotee approaches. So as her milk gets sweeter, seeing the beauty of his face gets more and more beautiful. To Yashoda, it's ever increasing. In this material world, no matter how beautiful people are, they get tired of looking at each other. They always have to put on some new dress or some new cosmetics or something like that. but they get tired of looking at it. But Krishna and his devotees, this is the spiritual platform. Krishna's beauty is ever increasing. And this is achintya, inconceivable. This is the heart of inconceivability. How could the supreme, all-pervading, unlimited beauty increase in beauty infinitely for the rest of eternity? Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense. Can't make sense. But that's why it's the absolute truth. It's beyond our imagination. Krishna is the very summit, the culmination, the supreme whole of all beauty. How could something be completely whole? Completely whole means it contains everything. There's nothing beyond it. Yes? That's what whole means. Om Purnamada Purnamidam. Krishna is the complete, the absolute truth is the complete whole. It contains everything. Nothing can exist outside of it. But yet, it's ever increasing at every moment for eternity. That is Krishna. Inconceivable. So Krishna is, she's seeing, her love is increasing, Krishna's beauty is increasing, her milk is getting sweeter and sweeter and sweeter, and Krishna's enjoying it. And what a beautiful Leela of love. And suddenly, she hears something and she looks over and the milk is boiling over in the next room. She puts Krishna down. This was an emergency situation. It's not something that you just think about. She didn't consult any Brahmins. She didn't get any scriptural references. The milk was boiling over. It's immediate. So she just put Krishna down and ran. Instinctively, intuitively. And the acharyas asked, why in the world would she put Krishna down for some milk boiling over? Yashoda Mai, because that milk was meant for Krishna later than the day. And it was special. Pushpaganda milk. It was from the best Yashoda Mai. She would get the best grasses. These grasses were, she would water the grass with the milk of the 8 best cows of all the 108 or 900,000 cows of Nanda Maharaj. She would water the grass with these cows, and she would feed the best cows that only that grass, the ultimate best grass to the ultimate best cows. And that milk, it had the fragrance of lotus flowers. Now in Kali Yuga today, even lotus flowers hardly have any fragrance. Vrindavan Kadamba flowers have very nice fragrance. But this was very unimaginable fragrance, this milk. Now, for those of you who may drink milk, you don't usually think about its fragrance so much, but this is very, very, very sweet, very delicious. And when she would use that milk to make preparations for Krishna, like sandesh, or burfi, or kheer, she would make so many nice preparations for Krishna, and Krishna would enjoy so much. So she was thinking in terms of the future. Krishna was thinking only of the moment that he was enjoying now. But that's the way mothers are. That's the way parents are supposed to be. They're supposed to be thinking of the future of the child. Usually children, they're thinking of the moment. I want to play. And the parents say, no, it is time for you to go to school. Well, what is the use of school? I don't like school. I like play. Yes? But for the future, you'll be happy when you, if because you go to school. The nature of little children, especially babies, they're not so much planning for the future. They want immediate happiness. But the parents' plan, their duty is to plan for the future. And at this end, harmonize, balance that with the present. If we do one or the other, it's not going to have a good result. If we're not thinking of the present moment and we're only thinking of the future, it could create havoc. And if we're only thinking of the future and not I don't remember what I just said, but it's important to consider both and to address both. So Yashoda Mai put Krishna down to save the milk that would nourish him for the rest of the day. And oh, in her mind, she must have been thinking of all the incredibly delicious things she was going to do with that milk for Krishna. She had her plan. So she ran. She made her priority. But Krishna became... Now we see that he's becoming very angry. His anger is not actual anger. It's the source of all anger. But it's ultimately meant always for the devotee's well-being. He wanted to give Yashoda Mai the highest happiness. Ever-increasing loving relationship. So he bites his lip with his teeth. And they're very new teeth, too. And he starts to cry. False tears, Srila Prabhupada explains. How could the absolute truth have anything false? Usually we say, when we challenge someone, we say, true or false? Yes? Is this true or is this false? Well, the absolute truth, everything is true. But within that absolute trueness is perfect falseness. Because it's simply for the sake of increasing loving relationships. It's like churning the truth and getting so many variegatedness within that truth for the purpose of enjoyment. Spiritual enjoyment. And he picks up a stone and breaks the pot of yogurt. And since I'm not giving Srimad Bhagavatam class tomorrow, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen tomorrow. And then he runs over to another room and he takes a grinding mortar, wooden for grinding spices, and he climbs up on it. And there's nice yogurt and butter, freshly churned butter, actually, that's hanging from the ropes from the ceiling. It's hanging from the ropes of ceiling so that monkeys can't get it and so that Krishna can't get it. But Krishna climbs up and gets it and eats it and calls the monkeys of Vrindavan, and the monkeys come into the courtyard and he's feeding them with his own hand. He's giving each of them, he's distributing. It's food for life. It's like midday meals. Krishna's giving the poor monkeys nice butter. And they're already happily eating. Can you imagine taking butter churned by Mother Yashoda with her love for Krishna, and Krishna's putting it in his mouth, and then he's taking his hand out of his mouth, and he's taking handful and putting it right in your hand directly. How fortunate are those monkeys? The monkeys are in complete transcendental happiness eating this butter. They're tasting. What a fortune to be a monkey in Vrindavan like this. Yashoda Mai is, when she's milking the cows, she's only thinking of Krishna's loving, her love for Krishna. And then when she turns it into yogurt, she does it in her love for Krishna. And when she's churning, there's tears in her eyes and milk of love is coming out of her breast, and she's churning and churning and singing beautiful songs for Krishna, and all that love is going directly right into the butter. And then Krishna's accepting it and he's eating it with love. And as he's eating the butter, it's becoming his Mahaprasad. What spiritually surcharged, empowered Mahaprasad that butter is. And then Krishna is personally, with his own hand, with love and compassion, he's giving it to the monkeys. And all that love and compassion is going into the butter too. What is that taste? Those monkeys must have been absolutely intoxicated. And this, just then, Yashoda Mai, she comes back and she sees the mess that Krishna created. There's the pot all broken. She follows his little buttery footprints into another room, and she sees Krishna taking all this good butter that she made for him and giving it to monkeys. And there's so many monkeys. They're all over her house. Yes? Krishna's calling all these monkeys right into her house. She smiles. But as a mother, she has to teach Krishna a proper lesson. So she picks up a stick, little stick. She would never, ever hit Krishna with that stick. But as a mother, she wanted to show him the stick and say, if you do this again, then I will hit you. And then Krishna would, I will never do it again. So she came up behind Lord Krishna. And as soon as she started coming very quietly, she was secretly coming behind. The monkeys. They saw Yashoda Mai with a stick. They immediately ran away. They started jumping out windows and jumping into trees and screaming, and there was fear in their eyes. Now, this is a very serious pastime. The psychology in it is so deep. We read, Bajahude mana sri nanda nandana abhayat charanaravindare. When we take shelter of Sri Nanda Nandana, we become fearless. Well, these monkeys, they took shelter of Sri Nandanandana. They were eating the butter from the hands of Sri Nandananda, being nourished by his ecstatic love. But when they saw Yashoda, they became very much afraid, spontaneously afraid. They screeched and ran away. They were so afraid, they were willing to leave that incredible scene of taking butter from the hand of Krishna. So is this a contradiction? This is achintya bheda bheda tattva. It is simultaneously a contradiction and not a contradiction. How is that possible? It's not possible. That's why it's transcendental, because it's not possible. Because their fear was nothing like the fear in this material world. Fear in this world is fear of death, fear of losing something that is very dear to us. And fear in this world, it inhibits happiness. But this fear, on the transcendental level, it's actually the perfection of fearlessness. These monkeys are totally fearless because they have taken shelter of Krishna. But the fear is the love of Yashoda. They're overpowered by her love. And her love can make Krishna cry. In fact, even Krishna became afraid. He followed the monkeys. The story gets even more exciting, more deep. The monkeys were afraid. How could the monkeys be afraid if they took shelter of Nandanandana, when anyone who takes shelter of Nandanandana becomes fearless? Well, Nandanandana became afraid. So what to speak of the monkeys who took shelter of him? He jumped off the grinding mortar and ran away in fear. And Yashodamai was chasing him, and he was running. He was running fast. And she was running fast. And he was running faster, and she was running faster. And they were running. Flowers were falling from her hair, and her sari was becoming loosened. And the acharyas tell us that the Upanishads describe the absolute truth as faster than the wind, faster than the fastest. Nobody can catch the absolute truth. But the absolute truth willingly is captured by the love of a devotee. So Yashodamai catches Krishna. And Krishna is so much afraid. We read here in the words of Shukadeva Goswami and Satyavrat Muni from Padma Purana in his Damodaraskakram gives a beautiful picture of this scene. Krishna's lips are trembling. His limbs are quivering. Tears are falling from his eyes. He's looking here and there and everywhere else for some possibility to escape. But Yashodamai is holding him. Very gentle, but tight enough so he can't get away. He's trapped. And he's telling his mother, I won't do it again. Please don't hit me. Put that stick away. Little Gopal afraid of a little stick. And it wasn't like a big bamboo. What do you call them? Lattes or something? It was just a little twig. And He wasn't afraid of Putana. A little later, he's not going to be afraid of Trinavarta or Shakatasura or Vatsasura. He's not even afraid of Indra. But he's afraid of this little stick. He's crying, please put that stick away. And Mother Yashoda throws the stick. So this beautiful pastime, it unfolds, and it has been told and retold hundreds of millions of times by great scholars, philosophers, and devotees throughout the ages. Krishna is Hari, which means one who steals. And he steals our hearts. When our heart becomes soft and sweet, like freshly churned butter, then Krishna will steal our heart. What makes the heart hard? And what makes the heart soft? This is what devotees must be very careful to understand. Srila Rupa Goswami explains, real surrender to Krishna, in order to facilitate that to come about within our own lives, two principles is we must accept what is favorable for devotional service and reject what is unfavorable for devotional service. We accept what makes the heart soft and we reject what makes the heart hard. Arrogance, egoism, makes the heart hard. Humility makes it soft. Greed makes the heart hard. Generosity, a service attitude, makes the heart soft. The modes of passion and ignorance make the heart hard. The mode of goodness makes the heart soft. When we chant the holy names of the Lord, it's like churning the heart. The churning makes it very soft, very sweet. But if while we're churning, if we engage in sinful activities, finding the good qualities in others makes the heart soft. Finding faults in others makes the heart very hard. This fault-finding propensity. So we have these 10 offenses to the holy names. We have these 4 regulative principles. We have the understanding of Vaishnav etiquette. All these principles are there to make our heart very soft, so that when we churn it with the chanting of the holy names, then Lord Hari, Krishna, Makhan Chor will be very attracted to steal our hearts. This is a science. And we find among devotees of the Lord, sometimes Srila Prabhupada explains, great personalities, they could be softer than a rose or harder than a thunderbolt. Depending on what is required to serve with humility and devotion. So So people who have soft hearts in Krishna consciousness, their heart may be very, very soft with love, with compassion. But at the same time, greatly determined. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami tells us that Raghunath Das Goswami, his determination to follow the regulative principles, he chanted 200,000 names every day. He offered 1,000 dandavat pranams, obeisances to Vaishnavas every day. 1,000 obeisances to Krishna every day. He would do parikram of Govardhan every day. How did he have time for all this? Somehow or other, he just had such enthusiasm. And he would just not miss. It says, Kaviraj Goswami tells us, the observance of his determined vows were like the lines in stone. It's like you see the lines in this marble. Marble is stone. No matter how much you cut deeper and deeper and deeper into the marble, the lines are still there. Yes? Like lines in stone. They are just there permanently. They can't be erased. You can't erase a line in marble. Of course, sometimes when they make deities, they paint it so you don't see it. But later on, the paint comes off and then you see it. You can't get rid of it. You could cover it, but you can't get rid of it. The lines and stone. That's the determination of a devotee. So a devotee could be very forceful. Arjuna, his heart was soft like freshly churned butter. But yet for Krishna's service, he fought the battle of Kurukshetra in such a heroic and fearless way. And that balance is a very, very important part of the true understanding of bhakti. It's not that bhakti means our heart becomes soft so we become so sentimental that we're not willing to boldly carry out the order of Krishna. And at the same time, the tendency is, in the name of carrying out the order of Krishna, or Guru, with determination, we could become very hard-hearted. Hanuman is another example. Who could have a softer heart than Hanumanji? When Hanumanji was crying in separation from Ram, and someone said, "Ram is in your heart, no need to cry." And Hanuman was so enthusiastic to see Ram. This is enthusiastic, lolium. He ripped open his chest and ripped open his heart. He wasn't concerned with anything except seeing Ram. How many of you have that enthusiasm? He didn't even think about it. Now, if you rip open your chest and rip open your heart, most of us would die. But Hanuman, Krishna reciprocated with his enthusiasm in such a way that there was Ram and Sita. They actually, just to save his life
from ripping anything else open. They actually incarnated and appeared personally within his heart, saying, yeah, here we are, here we are. Be happy.
Sita was blessing him, Ram was smiling, and Hanuman started crying tears of ecstasy. He knew that he was in. And I guess he closed everything up after that. Because he knew they were in, the Lord was in his heart. That's all he needed to know. He didn't have to see them anymore. He knew they were there. So beautiful. So Hanuman, such a soft-hearted, loving person. Absolutely compassionate. But yet, when he was face to face with Ravana, he told, imagine, he's all alone. And you have Indrajit and all of the great military generals and the armies of Ravana surrounding you. And Ravana's right there. And Hanuman said to Ravana, you are a fool, you are a coward. Now, if there's anything that is an insult to a Rakshasa warrior like Ravana, it's to call him a coward.
Yes?
In front of everyone. He publicly blasphemed Ravana in the worst possible way. That was his fearlessness.
So bold, so powerful, so fearless. But yet his heart was like freshly churned butter. So this balance of being bold and determined in our devotional service according to the need, and at the same time totally humble, Trinada Visuni Chena, soft-hearted and compassionate, that is a Vaishnava. Krishna steals our heart when we become like that, is Makan Chor. And ultimately, Krishna steals everything. The name Hari refers to so many different aspects of Krishna's lila. In this material existence, in the form of time, Krishna is Hari. He's going to take away everything from everyone. There's nothing we can hold on to in this material world. Our body, our possessions, our family members, friends, and loved ones, our abilities. We can become great musicians, we can become great scholars, we can become great artists, we can become great business people, great statesmen. We can know so many things. It's all taken away, either in life or in death. And some people, the solace is, even though I may not be able to enjoy it, I could leave it for my descendants. I can leave my wealth. I could leave my fortune. I could leave my reputation for my descendants. But all of that is going to be taken away too. Nothing. We can't hold on to anything.
and nobody else can hold on to anything that we have given them. Everybody must die. And everything's going to be lost. It's just a matter of time. We have so many nice things in the museums, yes. We have bones of dinosaurs. Have you seen? Do you have those in India? I don't know, but I remember in the Field Museum in Chicago near Grant Park, where I got tear gassed by the police once. I remember I was in a demonstration for peace and the Chicago police charged and attacked us and started shooting tear gas, so we ran away. Because they had clubs and helmets. So I was running. I was a pretty fast runner back when I was a teenager. So some of my friends got beaten up, but I actually ran out. But everything gets taken away. I'm not a fast runner anymore. But anyways, I ran and ran and ran and ran and ran and ran into the Field Museum. And then I was face to face with this Tyrannosaurus Rex, this man-eating dinosaur, yes, but he was just a skeleton. I remember when I ran inside, right in the main lobby, there was this big, gigantic dinosaur. They got his bones and reassembled him, so he was like, gigantic teeth. Can you imagine how much that cost? It's a fortune. So we're thinking we're preserving history by keeping these dinosaur bones, but even they're going to be lost. It's just a matter of time. Nothing is permanent in this world. I remember thinking that this dinosaur is probably reincarnated as one of the policemen outside. Beating people with sticks. But eventually the whole Earth planet is just, it's going to go bloop. It's going to be finished. That's the nature of material existence. Dukalayam ashashvatam. Everything is temporary. So from a material perspective, the Lord is Hari. He takes everything away. And there's a beautiful verse that Srila Prabhupada would quote often, that when Krishna wants to show his special mercy to his devotee, he takes things away. So that we realize that ultimately there's only Krishna to turn to. Because the tendency is we take shelter of things. Kali Yuga people love things and use people. Real culture is to use things and love people. And ultimately, the real person is the Atma, the soul. Love for the soul. Because the Atma is Nahanyate Hanyamane Saride. It does not die with this body. The Atma is unaffected by the annihilation of the entire cosmic manifestation. That's you. That's me. That's us. We are the eternal soul. You know, if we
if we get bit by a mosquito, we think, oh, why is this happening to me? Yes? Or if we break our arm or our leg, we're thinking, oh, how horrible. But the reality for the Atma, the eternal soul, what to speak of injury of the body? What to speak of death of this little body? The Atma is totally unaffected by the annihilation of the entire universe. It's unaffected by the annihilation of the entire cosmic manifestation. In the dream state, we're identifying with this body, we're identifying with the things and the people related to this body, so we're feeling pain. But the Atma itself is transcendental. Apareyam itashtvanyam prakritim virime param. It's beyond the eight elements of material existence. The Atma is part of Krishna. That's who we are. That's who we've always been. We're transcendental. Krishna consciousness is to give us that understanding. And the tendency is we become so distracted by temporary situations that we forget who we are and what our real happiness is. So from a material perspective, Lord Hari is taking away everything that exists. Everything that we identify with, everything we're attached to, Krishna's taking away. That's Hari. Or from a spiritual perspective, Hari is stealing our hearts. Filling our hearts with this param drishtvani vartate, with such a higher taste. Therefore, Rupa Goswami warns us, if you are attached to your family, friends, your possessions, to anything of this world, then do not go to Keshi Ghat on bank of Yamuna, because Krishna's there. His name is Govinda. He's standing in a threefold bending form playing his flute. And if you see those lotus-like beautiful eyes and his wonderful lips, which are beaming in the moonlight, you see that complexion, which is like the tamal tree. You become so attracted, so intoxicated, that beauty of Krishna steals your consciousness away from everything of this world. That's actually what it means to be a Bhai Charanaravindare, to be fearless. When Krishna steals your heart, steals your mind, Krishna's name is Manohar. He steals the mind away from all these temporary attachments. And we feel such an inner satisfaction. But our heart has to become soft, like freshly churned butter. The path of bhakti is the path of churning the heart. So it becomes like that. But we must follow it very carefully. And Krishna's Bhakta Vatsal. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, one of the greatest acharyas, acharya who has illuminated the rasika aspect of Krishna's leelas in such an unparalleled way. He has explained that this is
the primary feature of Krishna. Bhakta Vatsal. He loves his devotees. He's always merciful to his devotees. And of all aspects of Krishna, this is Krishna's dearmost quality to himself. Bhakta Vatsal. That he gives his heart with love to his devotees. And this is the quality of Krishna that we must very much understand. It is the highest truth. I came here to Mumbai. I was supposed to come in October, but I came early because of this most devastating tragedy that has come into all of our lives, of these 8 intimately dear devotees who Krishna has taken from us so suddenly from a material, even a spiritual perspective. Separation from a devotee is a great tragedy. Imagine 2 young girls who have lost their mother, father, and brother in an instant. A man who has lost his wife and only child. Parents who lost all their children. And so many friends who have lost their dear friends, god brothers, god sisters. But in the sadness of the loss of these devotees and in the sadness of seeing so much pain and broken hearts, it's very wonderful to see the family environment, how close it is within the congregation of devotees really reaching out to be there for each other. Something very beautiful. And I think for many who have been involved in this level, have actually realized the depth of a spiritual family, of how supportive, how compassionate, how selfless it could be. And I have seen that among many. Krishna is Hari. He's going to take everything away through time, through material existence. But he's also Bhakta Vatsal. We can absolutely, completely depend on Krishna as being the loving master of his devotees, the loving friend of his devotees. Suhridam sarva bhutanam, Krishna says.
Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarva loka maheshwaram suhridam sarva bhutanam.
Srila Prabhupada called this the ultimate supreme peace formula. When we understand that Krishna is the proprietor of everything. And ultimately everything is meant for Krishna's enjoyment. And Krishna is the greatest benefactor and friend for all living beings. So when we turn to Krishna, we know for sure Krishna's there. If we have any faith in Srimad Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam, or any of the acharyas, then we know for sure that for a sincere devotee, Krishna is always there. And that means for the eternal soul of a devotee. Because the body is going to perish. Today, tomorrow, inevitable. When Krishna says, Konti aprati janihi name bhakta pranashyati, I'm always going to protect my devotee. Arjuna, you promised this. It is my promise. Krishna is there to protect the devotee. If it meant the body, then you know, the body's going to die. So obviously that's not what Krishna means. He's there to protect the soul of the devotee. He may protect the body for some time. So all of these devotees, each and every one of them who has been taken from us was such an example of such sincere, beautiful devotional service. Therefore, we know for sure that Bhaktivatsal Krishna was there for them, to pick them up, to embrace them, to deliver them, to steal their soft hearts, to steal their beloved eternal souls from the shackles and confines of this material world. And at the same time is giving us an opportunity in our separation, through the tears of our love for them, to make our hearts softer, to bring us together as a selfless family where we're actually here for each other. We become so diverted by such unimportant things. We fight over such unimportant things. Yesterday there was a beautiful prayer ceremony for Gaur Krishna Prabhu by the brahmacharis. And some of the brahmacharis were talking about all the fights they had with Gaur Krishna Prabhu. Because he was a very strong person. We were talking about their arguments with him. It's quite amazing. And in almost every case, those arguments and very difficult relationships turned into the most intimate friendships. Because all of the things that we disagree with are usually so superficial. And then there was also the begging, you know, they were begging forgiveness
for having these disagreements. Most of the things that we crave for, that we're disturbed by, most of the things that create conflict between us are really not important at all. If we see it in context, we may lose some money. It's happening a lot these days. We may lose some reputation. Somebody may have said something. But even in this worldly, I mean, how does that compare to losing your mother, your father, your brother? When there was an earthquake in Gujarat or in Latur, tens and thousands of people died. People, all their property, all their relatives. That's the way the material world is. And yet we become so disturbed by such petty things. Yes, Bhaktivatsal has taken these loving devotees into his most magnanimous loving embrace. For them, everything is perfect. But for us, there's so much to learn. How to come together, really, as a spiritual family with real values and not allow these superficial tricks of Maya to come between us, to create enmity, to create disunity. Krishna is all beautiful. If somehow or other we can chant the holy name sincerely, come before Radha Gopinath with sincere prayer, then we can begin to experience Krishna. Just like this garland of Kadamba flowers. Some are green flowers that have no fragrance at all. Do you see? And some are fully blossomed, fragrant flowers. So some devotees are like neophyte devotees. They don't have so many good qualities. They're kind of hard. Kind of green. And others are very mature devotees. There's different colors and different shapes and everything else. But it's our sincere desire to please Krishna that is the string that can bind us all together. And when that garland of our unity based threaded on the string of bhakti, then together a beautiful offering could be made to Radha Gopinath. And our willingness to be there for each other, even despite differences, is part of the churning of the butter of our hearts to make it soft and sweet. And also the willingness to go through tragedies together with the proper spirit of compassion is part of the plan within this material world. by which Krishna can steal our hearts. Is there any questions? Yes, Yuga Avatar Prabhu.
Maharaj, thank you for a very nice class. Maharaj, my question is that when we are cultivating our children, we are told that we should give them all kinds of nice experiences. And most of the times we have left all those experiences behind when we come to Krishna consciousness. All those passions and enjoyments. But then in this process of giving experiences to the children, like for example taking them for a picnic and enjoyment, we also start subtly enjoying the process. And here on the other hand, we hear of this alarming tragic accidents also, which indicate that we should be serious. So while giving the children nice experiences and involving in their while raising them up and seeing that they are not deprived of any enjoyment, how do we maintain our internal seriousness?
Just give them Govinda Prabhu's associates. Govinda Prabhu will take them on a picnic. But actually, we should Krishnaize these things, as Prabhupada said. Krishnaize means bringing Krishna into the world. Bringing Krishna, investing bhakti in whatever things we do. So they could sing songs, but you could put Krishna in the songs. They could play games, but try to, you know, have them chant Krishna's names while they're playing the games. Picnic. Make it nice prasad picnic. But somehow or other try to put Krishna in. And harmless fun, harmless games, we can easily put Krishna into it and let them enjoy nicely. And how for you to not get attached to those things? If they're harmless children's games, I'm not so worried that you're going to become too attached to it. Just be attached to giving Krishna to your children in a way that's actually, they should be happy. Srila Prabhupada wanted our children happy, happy in Krishna consciousness. They shouldn't feel deprived in Krishna consciousness. Discipline is necessary. But that discipline should not make them feel deprived. The discipline should actually... Discipline to take away things that are very unfavorable for their growing up properly. But then giving them abundance of what is favorable. And giving it to them in such a way with so much love, with so much care, that they're happy. But if the parents have nice sadhana, if the parents have a good spiritual foundation, then they will actually be, parents could be very much empowered to give that experience to their children. Is that your question? Did I address it properly? And I see with you in particular that in raising your beautiful little daughter, Ladini, you're making great spiritual progress. And you're becoming more effulgent also. Does everyone agree with this? Radhe Shyam Prabhu raised both of his hands. And giving, we receive. Grihastha ashram, the reason children are there is by raising our children in a proper way. That's the way in which we develop love of God, is by taking that responsibility seriously. And it's not that taking your child on a picnic should be so... It's not that being Krishna conscious means you're totally miserable doing it. If Krishna's in the center, you can be happy doing it. Yes? In fact, I'll go with you if you invite me. Is there any other questions? Parijata Devi.
Maharaj, you just mentioned that when we leave, Krishna, all our material faults are left here, and Krishna just takes this and accepts the sincerity. So my question was that, is this Krishna's causeless mercy? Because we, it's such a doubt that we would ever be in a state of faultlessness. We don't know what kind of a situation we would be when we would be leaving. And these faults would actually cover our consciousness from the pure desire to serve the Lord. So when Krishna just sees our pure desire and sincerity, is just a causeless mercy?
It is Krishna's causeless mercy. If we are sincere. If we are sincere to overcome our faults, if we are sincere to cultivate positive bhakti. Krishna tells us in Gita, I will preserve what you have and carry what you lack. That is our hope. Raga dvesha vamuktaishtu vishayanandriyashtanan atma bashar purse. That it is the prasadam, the mercy of Krishna, that is what delivers us. By following the regulative principles, by following the proper conduct of devotional service, sincerely, that attracts Krishna's mercy. And it's that mercy that is the cause of our deliverance. So we must be sincere, totally depending on Krishna's grace, Radharani's grace. Hari Hari. And if we genuinely are sincere, Krishna will deliver us. Prabhupada will be there with all our faults to bring us back to Godhead. Hare Krishna. Is there another question? Someone here? Govinda Prabhu?
Maharaj, you're talking about balancing. At least with my own observation, with my defective senses, we see that those who are good with people, they are not very efficient in regards to doing things. and those who are extremely efficient could be harsh with people. So how can these two people balance? They may have to, because it is always seen like that, that those who are good, they're not good in management, and they're not in management. They don't see from the management perspective. And those who are in management, they fail to see the people's needs and concern. So how can they develop the other quality?
Which one are you?
Neither one of them. Neither one of them. Neither one of them.
That means you're both.
No.
Hari Hari. Good with people according to their definition of that. You know, some people are not so good at communicating with other people very well. So they're not good with people, we say. But at the same time, the very basis of Vaishnava philosophy, which pertains to everyone, is amanina manadena, offering respects to others, not expecting respect for oneself. Gopi Bharatur Padakamalayora Dasa 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 Dasanu Das, to be in the mood of a servant of the servant of the servant. So we may not have, by our conditioned nature, our karmic nature, very good abilities to really communicate with people. But we should still have the same state of consciousness toward people. That is necessary. It's not that because karmically we're not so good with people that we're exempt from practically every Vaishnava principle that is required of us. Yes? Because Krishna is a person. And we can't approach Krishna as a person unless we learn to deal with Vaishnavas as people. So we may not be very efficient with people skills, but our attitude has to still be Trinada Bisunichena. Our attitude still has to be to try to cultivate Das Das Anu Das, however great a manager we may be. So what was your question?
Both have problems, Maharaj. Even those who are good with people, they create trouble to management also. And those who are good at management, they create trouble to people. So how can they reconcile and minimize the problems and maximize benefits to the devotees?
When we're Krishna conscious, then everything is balanced. If Krishna is actually in the center, that balances everything. If our ego is in the center, if we have people skills or we have management skills, whichever one, if our ego is in the center, prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani saravasha, if I think I am good with people, or if we think I am good at management, and if our goal is to somehow or other get something for ourselves, either prestige or power or some material gains, then there's going to be difficulties. There's going to be difficulties between the people who are good with people, and there are going to be difficulties between the people who are good at management, and there's going to be difficulties between both sides and everybody in both sides, potentially. But if Krishna is actually in the center, if we're actually performing our work for the purpose of pleasing Krishna, pleasing Srila Prabhupada,
that's the string that brings together the garland of all different types of devotees. Yes, you see here, you have the people-oriented. And here you have the management-oriented. What brings them together? The thread. And what is the thread? Krishna consciousness. The desire to please and serve Krishna can bring everyone together. Does that answer your question?
That is the problem. Our ego comes in the middle more than Krishna.
Therefore, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, the only problem is a lack of Krishna consciousness. And the only solution is Krishna consciousness. Putting Krishna in the center, taking our egos out of the center. Is there one more question? Radhe Shyam Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, specifically I'm asking this question to you because in the Journey Home book, like a nectar collector honey, you know, you have been to so many people, taking the good things from them and progressing and evolving in the understanding of the Absolute Truth. So I had this question since my early days. The question is this, Maharaj, because you are talking about the soft heart also today, that every religious tradition demands unconditional surrender and a kind of exclusive and unflinching surrender, like Mame Kam Sharanam Braja, Krishna says. Jesus says, I am the only way, you know. So that kind of loyalty and faithfulness and dedication to the particular tradition is considered very essential by the practitioner. And also every religious tradition talks about missionary spirit to expand that tradition far and wide. So because of these two things, how can clashes between different religious traditions be avoided in this world as they want to expand their domain more and more because they are convinced that this is the right path? You know, so how could, then at the same time my question also is, how could we maintain our hearts soft without having hatred for other religious traditions also?
Hare Krishna. Some people say that the Pune temple is the best, and others say that the Chopati temple is the best. And then others say the Wada temple is even better. Of course, Juhu is there too, and everyone else. So, there's so many reasons to fight. That's the nature of material existence. But actual religion is supposed to make us transcendental to the influences of the ego and material existence. And yes, every scripture that I've ever seen, there are passages saying we are the best and we are the only way. It's saying it in one way or another. Yes? And even different Puranas say it. Yes? Whatever Deva is being proclaimed in a Purana, it's describing it's the best. Yes? That's why people worship them. So Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, very special because it's going right, it's teaching us the essence. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, the culmination is Krishna, but at the same time,
There's descriptions of Ram, Vamana, Varaha, Narasingha, Parasuram, Kapila, in great detail. And we understand, same one God, different ways. So if someone worships Narasingha, we understand that's my Krishna. Yes? And if you're a Narasingha Bhakta, when you see Krishna, you're thinking, that's my Narasingha. That's my sweet little Narasingha Dev stealing stealing butter. But we see the oneness in the unit, in the diversity. So if we understand Saragrahi, a true spiritual person is Saragrahi. Srila Prabhupada said, Jesus is our guru. Yes? Srila Prabhupada said, if we could help make a Christian or a Muslim or a Jew or a whatever it may be, if we could help them to love God in a deeper way, then that's also the success of our movement. Sanatan Dharma. Sanatan Dharma is awakening the true essence of every soul, which is to love God. And we understand God has appeared in many ways, in many forms, to different people at different times. And all of these different revelations of religions are ways that God has come according to time and place and circumstance to help people come closer to awakening their love. So if we love Krishna, we will love the God of other religions. Again, the problem is not... And when it's when a scripture says, my way is the best way, or this is the only way, we understand it from the essence. That means the way is... When Jesus say, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and no one can come through the Father except through me, seeing that through the eyes of Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Ramayana, and other great scriptures, that means when he's saying that, he's representing Krishna. He's representing God. The only, and his teachings is to love God. So the only way to God is by being the servant of one who loves God. Yes? And that's what a pure devotee is. So to see the unity and the diversity is true religion. Religion should create love, not hate. Should create tolerance, not intolerance. And this is explained so nicely in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Lord Chaitanya told Murari Gupta, you should worship Krishna, because Krishna's sweeter, his pastimes are more pleasing, and the ecstatic love of the gopis is the highest. Yes? So you should worship Krishna. And then Murari Gupta came the next day and asked Mahaprabhu for permission to end his life. He said, because you have given me this order, I cannot follow it. I've already given my head and my heart to Ram. I cannot give it to anyone else. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became ecstatic. He embraced Murari Gupta. He said, you are Hanuman. I tested your love for Ram by telling you to worship Krishna. So according to Srimad Bhagavat, Krishna's the highest, Krishna's Tu Bhagavan Swayam, and we accept that wholeheartedly. But Ram is Krishna. He may not be manifesting the same opulence as Krishna, but he's the same Krishna. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu absolutely loved Ram for his devotion to Krishna. I mean, he loved
Murari Gupta for his devotion to Ram. And when he was in South India, there was that devotee who wouldn't eat because he thought that Sita had been touched by Ravana. Yes? And then Ram, Lord Chaitanya said, actually, Sita cannot be touched by Ravana. It was a false Sita. So you should eat. So just out of etiquette, he ate. But then at Rameshwaram, Lord Chaitanya heard the Kurma Purana, where it actually explained that. And Lord Chaitanya was so concerned for this devotee eating nice prasad and being happy that he didn't even copy it. He had the Brahmins copy it, then he took the original manuscript because he wanted to give the most authentic possible evidence. The original ancient manuscript was given to Lord Chaitanya, and he brought it back to Madurai and showed it to this Ram Bhakta. And then the Ram Bhakta made a big feast for Lord Chaitanya to celebrate that Sita was never touched by Ravana. And then he understood, you are my beloved Ram. Yes? Who is Lord Chaitanya? Shri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nahi Anya. He's Krishna tasting the sweetness of Radha's love. But this Brahman was seeing Lord Chaitanya as Ram. You are my beloved Ram. Yes? And Mahaprabhu was happy to reveal, he was ecstatic to reveal himself as Ram. And he was so happy with this devotee's love for Ram, not for Radha Krishna, but for Ram. He was so happy with that love that he was willing to go all the way from Madurai to Rameshwaram, copy the Kurma Purana, convince the pujaris to give him the original and bring it all the way back to Madurai, which was completely the opposite direction of where he was going. Hari Hari. So that's saying Lord Chaitanya taught us to see the essence. And when Lord Chaitanya was talking to the Chandkazi, where they were discussing the principles of the Quran, he was accepting Allah as God, a name of God, to approaching God. And he was teaching the Chandkazi to go above the karmakanda conceptions of both Vedas or Quran and actually understand God as the Supreme Person, the all-attractive one, different aspects. So yes, we understand this, that within every scripture there is, with every teacher practically, this is the highest, this is the only way. But we understand what that really means. Savai pungshang paro dharmo, to love God is the highest. Yes, what would you like to say, Radhesha?
Thank you for such a wonderful answer, Maharaj. One small clarification in your answer. When we find somebody following some substandard religious principles or some following, nowadays there are so many organizations, you know, preaching and propagating something substandard, which is like making a human being into God, you know, such kind of organizations. So when we come across such people, sometimes when I remember you in my mind, I feel I should be very sensitive, you know. Because earlier I used to be like, you know, immediately tell them that, you know, this is bogus, you should give it up. But when I think of, after the Journey Home book, I feel that I should be a little more sensitive. I should not be too hasty to tell them the truth. Otherwise they will run away or they will feel we are antagonizing them. So to what degree we should be sensitive and not telling the truth or reserve the truth for the future? That also I wanted to know.
We should always tell the truth, but we should tell the truth in a way
that has the desired effect. According to time, place, and circumstance or certain situations, and what is it actually we want? What is the service that we're meant to accomplish in that particular situation? And accordingly, we present the truth as it is in a way that will accomplish the best possible service we could do in that situation. We don't meddle with siddhanta. The siddhanta is as it is. But we can present quantities and we could present it in a way that's actually going to be most effective. Sometimes saying bogus is most effective. Sometimes somehow or other engaging a person in service without blasting them away is most effective. Yes? So we have to do what's actually most favorable. That takes maturity, takes realization, takes Guru and Krishna's mercy. Does that answer your question? Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.